This is Brian Forster, and welcome to the Active Investor Podcast, our monthly look at what's happening across asset management and how Lord Abbett's investment leaders are viewing today's markets, as well as the strategies that can help investors navigate different challenges and opportunities. In this episode, we're talking about high-quality fixed income, and specifically navigating the investment-grade intermediate bond space, or what's known as core and core plus fixed income. And we have a great guest for today's episode, and that's Leah Traub, a partner and portfolio manager here at Lord Abbett. Before she entered the financial services industry, Leah got her PhD in economics, had experience as a professor, and worked as an economist at the Federal Reserve, so quite a resume. Now she has Lord Abbett's global rates and liquid products team and manages our global currency team. And most relevant to our discussion today, she is one of the portfolio managers on our core and core plus investment strategies. So welcome, Leah.
Hi, great to be here.
Great to have you. So in the core and core plus space, and you know, I mentioned that you're a portfolio manager on those two products here. For the period after the GFC, it had very low interest rate environment, not a whole lot of yield, some interest rate risk. Then 2022 happened, big pickup in inflation and interest rates. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And a lot of sort of big, widely held managers out there in the core and core plus space got hit pretty hard by that. Maybe just talk a little bit about our experience and how we were able to sort of avoid a lot of that that downside, mm-hmm. and sort of what makes us different.
Sure, happy to do so. So before I get into exactly what happened in 22, let me first kind of talk about the key parts of our investment process that has helped us to have consistent excess returns over different market environments.
Right.
So the very first is that we, as a multi-sector strategy, almost all of our strategies here at Lord Abbett are multi-sector, is we really have four very diversified sources of alpha. It's sector allocation, security selection, duration and yield curve, and of course, the overall level of spread duration or the overall risk that we're going to have. And really, if you look over time, we've varied where we, you know, where we're getting our most source of alpha, right? Which of those areas, mm-hmm. and we can allocate more or less risk to each of those areas depending on where the opportunity set is. So it gives us the ability to really navigate different market environments, quite easily. Mm-hmm. And then the second point I want to make on our investment process is that unlike I think some of our competitors in the space is. We don't swing for the fences with our macro views. We definitely want to express our macro views on things like duration and term structure within the portfolios, but we do so in a more, I would say, conservative approach. Mm-hmm. We have a plus minus 1 year duration bands pretty much around our benchmark for most of our core and core plus strategies. And you know, while that may seem like not a lot, given the rate volatility that we've seen over the last 5 years or more, it really is enough bandwidth to be able to express the views that we want and really, you know, generate significant amounts of alpha when, of course, we are correct. Mm-hmm. So going back to the unique situation in 2022, let me just talk about a couple of points. Kind of at the end of 2021, we were looking at that opportunity set that I mentioned, and spreads had gotten very tight, right? After COVID, there was a big rally in risk, and we're looking at spreads very tight. A lot of people in the market thought that the Fed was not going to hike anytime soon, that we were going to keep rates low, just like they did after the GFC for many years, right? Everyone thought inflation was going to be transitory, right? And we were looking at this and saying, doesn't seem right to us. So we started reducing our overall level of spread risk. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, really reflecting the tight valuations and the fact that we thought people were maybe getting a little bit too complacent about the environment. And then also on the inflation side, we did not subscribe to the view that it was going to be transitory. So we started adding some inflation exposure into our portfolios, things like tips. We started reducing our overall, you know, duration exposure. So interest rate exposure, shortening up the duration. We started adding floating rate over fixed. We were rotating more into securitized and away from kind of longer end investment grade corporates. Yep. So it was that dynamic sector allocation combined with you know, making some good calls kind of a little bit on the macro side and positioning that way because we had some conviction that helped us to insulate the portfolio in an otherwise challenging time for fixed income.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So basically getting yourself positioned for an environment you thought was coming, but not taking sort of reckless risk in, in an asset class that really kind of you want to be able to sleep at night, right? And a lot of people own Core and Core Plus, you know, for consistency. And that seems like what you're trying to accomplish there. So a lot's happened this year with tariffs, trade policy, a lot of geopolitical uncertainty and some mixed economic data. How are you and your team thinking about just the overall macro backdrop right now?
Sure. Well, I'll talk about three different points, right? So first on the growth outlook, there's no doubt that we've slowed in terms of growth in 2025, right? The first half of this year, we averaged growth of about 1.4%. It was definitely volatile, right? Negative in the first quarter and then much more positive in the second quarter, but that was due to the tariff, you know, uncertainty that we had. So we're averaging about 1.5% growth. The third quarter looks kind of about the same, right? Maybe 1.5 to 2% in growth. We're not really expecting much more in the fourth quarter. So what does that mean? Trend growth is about 2%. So we're a little bit shy of trend growth. I call that a muddle through kind of scenario. Consumption is still running at about 2-2.5%. We know consumption is about 70% of total GDP. And I really think, you know, I'll get into the labor market in a minute. The unemployment rate is still pretty low. And if people have a job and people have wages, then the U.S. consumer spends. That's just the way it is. So I think it's hard for us to go into a recession within that backdrop. But we're clearly have slowed. In the labor market, right now, we've just gotten some disappointing labor market data. The last 3 months has been very, very low. In terms of net new additions to the payrolls. I characterize the labor market as on pause, right? That basically means that companies are not net hiring, but they're also not really firing people either. The unemployment rate at 4.3% right now, it's definitely climbed a little bit higher, but definitely on a historical basis, it's still very, very low, right? So initial jobless claims, we're not seeing a spike up there, right? So we're not seeing the firing happen. So I really think what that reflects is just the uncertain environment that we've been in. Companies didn't know what was going to happen with tariffs. They're not sure exactly what's going to happen on the growth front. So they're just saying, let me wait and see, right? But earnings are still very good. We just went through second quarter earnings cycle within companies and earnings are still good. I mean, guidance was a little bit mixed, but companies are still generating revenue. So they don't need to let workers go. So right now we're in a little bit of a pause situation on the labor market. And then finally, you get the inflation. Inflation is above target, and it's sticky above target. We're seeing some pass through from the tariffs. It's gradual, right? But we expect it to continue to pass through over the next few months. So we're expecting somewhere around, let's say, 0.3% month over month inflation. If you annualize that, that's a 3.6% annualized rate. We're already at a CPI, at a core CPI that's 3.1%. We're going to get new numbers in a short amount of time. But, you know, so if you look at that inflation picture, it's not really where the Fed wants it to be, right? The Fed would rather it be 2%. I don't see us going back down to that 2% level anytime soon. However, there is nothing wrong with a 3% inflation. The Fed does not have to start hiking because we're hanging out at around 3%. As long as we're not going back in the wrong direction, back up to that 6%, whatever we were seeing back in 22, the Fed does not need to react with hikes. But it probably will be a little bit slower, you know, a little bit, you know, they've been taking their time a little bit on the cutting cycle, right?
Right. Okay. And so speaking of the Fed, you know, we're recording this on September 9th. The next meeting is next Wednesday, the 17th. So we'll see when this comes out and we'll see if you're right. The market is definitely expecting something of a meaningful shift in Fed policy. You know, what are your expectations, I guess, for next week and then beyond?
Right. So the market is pricing in a pretty large resumption of the easing cycle, right? So let's remind everybody that the Fed did cut 100 basis points in the fourth quarter of 24. Then they've been in this wait and see pattern, partially because of what's happening on the fiscal side. They wanted to see what was going to end up happening with tariff policy and with, you know, with the big the OBBB, the one big deal bill, right, that was end up passing. So they were waiting and seeing with that and kind of watching the economy muddle through, this inflation being a little bit higher. But now they're pretty much in a position to start cutting again. We had Chair Powell at Jackson Hole basically say that it was up to the labor market. The labor market has been weakening. There's no doubt about that. We just got the August numbers in the beginning of September. It was very weak, much weaker than expected. So it seems like everybody is pretty much on board with a 25 basis point cut on September 17th, the market fully pricing that in. So the big question is where from, you know, what happens next, right? So again, as of September 9th, the Fed funds futures market is pricing in another 150 basis points of cuts over the next 18 months. That's taking us down to a terminal rate of about 2.8%. That's below the Fed's neutral rate. So that is consistent with a picture of the economy slowing and potentially continuing to slow. And also inflation, as I said, not ticking higher, ticking lower, right? So there's a lot priced in right now in terms of Fed cuts. Now, where could that be wrong? Well, it could be wrong if we actually get a reacceleration of growth in 26. And something that we have been thinking about this year is, especially with the administration policies, is they kind of started off with the medicine and then they're finishing up with the candy. So what do I mean by that? They started out with the spending cuts, right, with the DOGE kind of related spending cuts and the tariffs, right, which have been negative and has a negative impact on growth. But what are we getting next? We're getting the taxes, right, and the better tax regime for companies, right, in addition to individuals. We're also probably moving into the deregulation phase. That was something the markets were very excited about when Trump first came in into the presidency. So we're also going to have Fed cuts, right? So that could set us up for a little bit of a reacceleration in growth next year. And then that's going to be a very interesting story, right, for the Fed, because maybe we don't get all the cuts that we're expecting. Maybe we don't need to bring rates down as low, right? Certainly not below neutral. Now, of course, underlying that is that we're going to get a new Fed chair. And so we have to think about a little bit of the politics of the situation, right? We have to think about, you know, we'll probably get somebody in who has a little bit more of a dovish lean. And then does that prolong those Fed cuts, you know, that at least that the market's already pricing in?
Right.
So I think in the near term, we should definitely expect a couple of cuts for sure. But I think where we're a little bit more skeptical of is where is that terminal rate going to end up being?
Yeah.
Right. Do we get all those cuts in kind of later in 26 and even into 27 that the market's expecting right now?
A lot of variables to think about. And I guess another good reason to go back to the first question of why you wouldn't want to take some massive bet one way or the other with all that going on. Right. So,
To have a ton of conviction right now.
Yeah. That's right. So let's come back to your investing and, you know, kind of managing the portfolios that you do, and, you know, specifically around Core and Core Plus. You know, I talked about sort of the kind of dismal environment for the asset class during the last decade when rates were so low and the yields were so low. And then after the pain of 22, the phrase was sort of there's yield back in fixed income, right? And so how are you feeling sort of just about the asset class, and then kind of like where is there opportunity and where should maybe investors maybe stay away from?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the yield is still there, which is great. Even after the 100 basis points of cuts we already had, I mean, you're looking at investment grade corporate yields, you know, near the highs that we've seen, right? Just kind of been hanging out there on 5% and in a lot of, you know, for an IG corporate index. And so the carry is still there, right? And the economic backdrop that I laid out is actually still very constructive for credit. Slowing growth and not recession, you're muddling through, you have a little bit of inflation, earnings are still looking pretty good, right? Companies still have, you know, they still have pretty good margins, right? Tariffs hasn't you know, at least they haven't been hurting yet, right, on that front. So that's a very good backdrop for credit. Now, unfortunately, the whole market agrees with us that it is still a pretty good backdrop for credit, which means valuations are tight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, risky assets have been doing very well, you know, this year. And spreads in a lot of the sectors that we look at are pretty tight, right? They are, you know, getting close to kind of multi-year tights in a lot of the sectors, right? So you do have to be mindful of that. And again, you shouldn't be swinging for the fences right now. This is not the time to be necessarily max overweight, right? You know, very, you know, high beta assets. It's just not, you're not getting compensated for it.
Yeah.
So what we really are focused on is that carry aspect of it, right? We want high quality carry. Not looking so much for further spread compression, but more of how do we get that yield?
Yeah.
So favoring things like AAA securitized, again, over investment grade corporates. Agency mortgages look still pretty attractive relative to investment grade corporates. It's one of the sectors that are not back to all time heights, right?
Yeah.
Because a couple of years ago, the Fed was buying all the agency mortgages and there was no value, right, in agency mortgages. Now, hey, there's some value. And if the Fed cuts, that's going to reaccelerate the housing market a bit. And we like agency mortgages. We also like non-agency residential mortgage securities as well. Where are we staying away from? Actually, we're moving a little bit away from more of the floating rate assets back into fixed assets, right? We do think this is a good environment for duration. We like kind of, you know, intermediate duration. Here, what I would call the belly of the curve, it tends to do well, especially if the growth slowdown kind of gets a little worse or persists, you know, a bit more. So those are a couple areas. Now, if we go into more of a core plus kind of strategy, ones where we can take a little bit more high yield risk, there is another area of the market that's not back to almost all time tights, and that's the CCC area. Now, you have to be very careful, of course, when you're going down in quality, and it is much more idiosyncratic opportunities. A lot of those idiosyncratic opportunities are actually being driven by the M&A environment. So we're seeing a big pickup now in M&A. We're seeing new deals being announced all the time,
right,
and some big mega deals, right, are being announced. The idea is that this administration is going to be much more willing to let those mergers or acquisitions go through, right, in the deregulatory environment. Also, with volatility being quite low and companies having cash, right, they're being able to facilitate these transactions. So we're really relying on our credit research analysts,
right,
to help us to really pick those winners. We have, you know, 30 excellent, you know, credit analysts who are looking at each individual companies all the time, focused, you know, focus on these opportunities, and we've been able to, you know, pick some of those winners. So I think the moral of the story is you want to go, you know, reach down in credit a little bit, down in quality a little bit, but when you can really do that deep fundamental research and really focus on more of that security selection,
right,
piece, right? I think that's going to be a bigger driver of our returns this year than maybe in other environments.
Yeah.
Just given where the overall spread levels are, it really comes down to picking those names.
Yeah, it makes total sense. One last area that I'll ask you about, and I know you have some purview over global rates, global currencies, so a global mindset. Your thoughts on non-US fixed income?
Sure. I mean, I think it's almost been a resurgence in non-US investing this year. I think one of the peak themes of the last 6 months has been let's diversify away from the dollar and let's diversify away from dollar assets. I think Liberation Day was a wake-up call to a lot of large asset allocators globally that looked at their portfolios and said, I'm very overweight the dollar. All right, I'm very overweight, and not just the dollar meaning the currency, but just dollar assets. And yes, we're the largest market in the world, but do you really want to be over allocated there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have seen, you know, money start to move a little bit and start to diversify. Reserve managers are diversifying a little bit away, from the dollar. So I think it's it's something that, you know, we're thinking about, obviously here at Lord Abbett, but something we're talking to our clients about as well is how do you get a more global perspective? It doesn't mean that necessarily you have to take the currency risk, right? You could be buying great European companies, right, that just issue in dollars. And that's been a theme for us, especially when you look at what's happening in Europe. They are supporting their economies finally via fiscal and monetary. The European Central Bank has been ahead of the Fed in terms of cutting. They're already back to their 2% inflation. They're almost at the end of their cutting cycle.
Right.
And you're seeing countries like Germany actually want to run a budget deficit. Mm-hmm. They have all this capital, basically. Like, if anyone has fiscal space, it's Germany, right? To be able to spend. And they're now seeing, hey, we have to spend on things like defense and be able to generate some organic growth that they really haven't been able to do for really a good decade or two, right? So lots of opportunities there. We're also seeing opportunities, you know, in Japan. Japan has nominal growth, right, for the first time in a long time. So opportunities.
Decades.
Exactly, right? They have real growth and they have inflation, right? Yeah. So opportunities are being created. And I think it's just, I think what happened this year was a little bit of a wake-up call, mm-hmm. right, to investors overall. And it's important to kind of look at portfolios and think about how do you diversify away, right? Yeah. Whether it's getting exposure to a different geography, right? As I said, it doesn't have to be a currency. Also, different interest rates, emerging markets. They came through after COVID really much better than I think a lot of people thought that they were. Almost all the emerging market central banks have been able to cut rates, right? So they've been able to support their economies there. And there are some local markets, right, that we could get exposure to as well and take advantage of the better growth environment that's outside the U.S., right? I mean, I think at the end of the day, if you look at U.S. growth relative to non-U.S. growth, we have lagged in the last couple of quarters.
Yeah.
That's a new phenomenon for us, right? It's been all about U.S. exceptionalism, you know, and maybe we can go back to that, right? I kind of gave you, you know, a little pitch for why 26 might be a little bit better, and maybe we're kind of coming out of our little slump, so to speak. But, you know, it's not a surprise to see that the dollar has depreciated this year, for example.
Yeah.
Because of these factors.
This is great. I mean, a lot to talk about there, a lot to think about just in terms of the macro, what the Fed's going to do, but also just how to navigate, you know, a space that a lot goes into it, right? A lot goes into managing core and core plus, mm-hmm. which, you know, it can sort of be a sleepy asset class. And then like in 22, all of a sudden, if you're on the wrong side of that, it could really, you know, hurt you. So I think it's an area that I think people really appreciate when they see consistency there and, you know, kind of navigating different markets the way you guys have done. So thanks for joining us today. I hope to have you back at some point. Great.
Yeah.
For investors wanting to learn more about Lord Abbett's views on the market, please visit the insight section of lordabbett.com. We have a number of papers on fixed income investing that touch on a lot of what we discussed here today. And if you have any comments on today's episode or ideas for future episodes, email podcasts@lordabbett.com. We welcome your thoughts and would love to hear from you. So we'll leave it there. This has been Brian Forster with the Active Investor Podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is intended solely for informational purposes and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation. The contents are based on available information at creation and subject to change. It is not intended as investment, legal, or tax advice. Lord Abbett is not acting as your fiduciary. Past performance is not a reliable indicator or guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk, including the loss of capital. Certain information contained herein has been obtained from third-party sources, and such information has not been independently verified by Lord Abbett. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbett speaker are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. References to specific asset classes and financial markets are for illustrative purposes only. Neither Lord Abbett nor the Lord Abbett speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The information in this podcast does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without the permission of Lord Abbett. Lord Abbett Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbett Distributor LLC, member FINRA. For additional information on risk and a glossary of terms used in this broadcast, visit lordabbett.com. This broadcast is the copyright 2025 of Lord, Abbott & Co. LLC. All rights reserved. This episode was recorded on September 9th, 2025.